This is Community Voices on 91.9 UIS. I'm co-host Randy Eccles. We have a guest with us today, Carol Kopp, who is going to be visiting Springfield soon because the Daughters of Union Veterans of the Civil War are going to be here in Springfield for their 135th National Convention in July.
It's our annual convention where we give our annual reports, we get together, we have some social time, elect new officers, and talk about what all of the departments have accomplished throughout the year.
People may be familiar with Daughters of the Revolution, but this is Daughters of the Union Veterans of the Civil War. If they're not familiar, what is the organization about?
After the American Civil War, there was an organization known as the Grand Army of the Republic that consisted of Union Veterans of the Civil War. The Daughters of Union Veterans of the Civil War was the fifth, what we call, Allied Order that came out of the Grand Army of the Republic. It was preceded by the Women's Relief Corps, the Ladies of the Grand Army of the Republic, the Sons of Union Veterans of the Civil War, the Auxiliary to the Sons of Union Veterans of the Civil War, and the Daughters of Union Veterans of the Civil War was the last and final order established with the Grand Army of the Republic. We were founded in 1885. We preceded the Daughters of the American Revolution. We were the first lineage society. Specifically, you had to prove that you had a Union soldier in your direct lineage who served in the American Civil War, the Union soldier.
I imagine with technology that's changed over the years, it used to have to be some sort of documentation proof, but do you use DNA testing now to show some of that?
We do not use DNA testing, but so many records are available online now. We have Fold 3, which has many, many documents about soldiers who served not only in the Civil War, but the War of 1812, the American Revolution, all the different wars we fought. We fought a lot of wars.
Unfortunately, that hasn't ended. Why is a lineage organization like this important?
I think it's important to people personally because it puts their ancestors into a historic period. It allows you to place your ancestors in a period and try to understand what they went through. But I think it's also important, especially for the American Civil War, with so many soldiers on both sides, on the North and the South, and a lot of them had no choice to fight one way or the other. It's so important to remember the sacrifices that they had because it was a terrible war. It was a time when ancient military tactics met modern warfare, modern weaponry. It was devastating. There were over 650,000 casualties of all causes. I mean, whether it was death, whether it was illness, whether it was long-term disability.
Are people from both sides allowed into the organization? Is there a different organization for Southern?
There's a different organization. It's called, for the women, it's called the United Daughters of the Confederacy. Many of the women in the Daughters of Union Veterans have dual ancestry because we are a very mobile country now. My family is all from the North, but I have many friends who have ancestors in the North and in the South.
Do the two organizations collaborate or interact at all?
We do. Memorial Day, of course, the Southern Memorial Day is different from the Northern. We try to respect the sacrifices made by the soldiers. We try not to take political sides at all, to remember that there were huge sacrifices by families and the children that were left behind. Our Memorial Day ceremony that we do every year, or the holiday that we celebrate, came directly out of the American Civil War. It was founded, there's a lot of different people that claim that they had the first Memorial Day ceremony, but the Grand Army of the Republic was basically responsible for establishing Memorial Day as a national holiday. And it's still to this day, even though we celebrate on the national holiday, the Grand Army of the Republic celebration is always held on May 30th. For example, at Arlington National Cemetery, there's a ceremony at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, but on May 30th, there's a Tomb of the Unknown Civil War Soldier, also at Arlington, and that's on May 30th.
The Civil War was a huge issue for veterans from both sides, and we had any casualty was a casualty eventually of United States citizens. And there's quite a few folks, I would imagine, who can share lineage from there. You're coming here for the National Convention. You're coming to Springfield, but the organization is based in Springfield.
Yes.
And why'd you choose Springfield?
I'm not sure of the reasoning behind that, except that we did have a headquarters in Washington, D.C. for many years, and then it was decided to move, really, because we honor Civil War veterans, and Abraham Lincoln, we consider that his hometown, even though that's not where he was born. He didn't always live there, but that was his final resting place. That's where he was elected as president. The organization chose that at the time, back in the late 1940s, I believe it was, to relocate to that area because of the history and the association with Abraham Lincoln. We hold annual ceremonies there. There's Lincoln's death day. There's Lincoln's birthday. Of course, we go to Washington, D.C. for his birthday celebration. And then there's Remembrance Day also in November. There's quite a bit that we do in Springfield, the different tents and departments do there.
There's been a lot of attention to the Civil War again lately because there's been disagreements within the country. Hopefully, it's not something we have to learn about again. When you have looked back at your lineage to be a part of the organization, what did you learn that you didn't know, or what did you discover?
What I discovered first was that this was the first veteran that I knew about when I started my family research. I did not know I had much of an ancestry in the United States because I thought, according to my mother, I grew up in Pennsylvania. I always wanted to be a patriot. And I would come home and say, "Let's bake bread." And my mother said, "Are you crazy?" You know, I thought patriots bake bread. I said, "Well, who were our ancestors?" And she said, "Well, they all just got off the boat." Her mother was Irish. Her direct lineage was Irish. But it's true that they were Irish, but they married people that were here before the Great Potato Famine. I discovered that Elijah Dennis, who served in the 90th Pennsylvania, and the 90th Pennsylvania was known as the original National Guard. They had the most military experience in the country at the time. What I discovered, several things about Elijah Dennis, that he appeared in the 1850 census. He was born in Schuylkill County, which was really still frontier land. There are no records there. I went to try to find out where he was born, about his family. But he appeared in Montgomery County, Pennsylvania, in 1850, serving as a farmhand on a farm. And then he married my great-great-grandmother in Bucks County, Pennsylvania. And eventually they moved off of the farm and they became cigar makers. And cigar making was a huge, huge industry. Some of it was sort of like Amway is today. You know, you could set up cigar making in your home and hope to make a lot of money. When the Civil War came in 1860, he enlisted pretty early on. He served in the 90th Pennsylvania his full term. And then in the fall of 1864, he was injured and he was lame in one arm. And so he couldn't work. And he eventually, his wife and he got divorced in about 1884. He worked as a doorman in Philadelphia for different hotels. And then he went to Wilmington, Delaware. He pretty much died. His health was not good. His pension records show that he suffered from illnesses that the soldiers got, and he suffered the rest of his life with those illnesses. He got rheumatic fever when he was in the Army. So it just puts into perspective the difficulties of life at that time, what they suffered with, how it may have changed their family dynamics, causing so many of them to be divorced. when my great grandmother, I think, was the only living child when he passed away. It's just a difficult time. That's what I learned about that ancestor.
I would imagine most of the daughters have Ancestry.com accounts and document this stuff themselves.
The majority of the way that women get involved in this is they start doing their genealogy. And you think, oh my gosh, she was in the Civil War. I wonder if there's an organization about the Civil War. And then, of course, as you work your way back, I have an 1812 ancestor. I have a daughter, a Revolutionary War ancestor. And then I have ancestors who came over in the colonial period, the Custer family, the Rittenhouse family, all were major movers and shakers in the, not religious wise, but in the Philadelphia and Germantown area in Philadelphia.
It's been a rich study of history in your lineage, but it also really takes you back to the Civil War. As you get ready to come to Springfield for your 135th National Convention in July, if somebody thinks, I have a relative, I have lineage to the Civil War, I'd like to attend, but they haven't gone through the Daughters of Union Veterans of the Civil War yet, what can they do? Can they attend? Do they need to contact the organization? How does that work?
They need to reach out to the organization. They can reach out to headquarters. There is a website. We have a national website, and there is a contact form there. They can attend some of the activities at the national convention. We have a lot of social activities as well. They can get information there about joining. There'll be lots of ladies that can give them information about joining, finding out what they would like to do. The business meetings themselves are just for members because it's really a business meeting. And so there's voting that goes on about changes in bylaws, those kinds of things. Usually guests are excluded from those meetings in particular, just because it would be confusing for them, I think.
You were talking about the commonality of divorce in a lot of veterans, and the country was still developing as the Civil War was going on. Then a lot of the soldiers made the determination to go out west and settle the wilderness there. What other commonalities do you see now when you get together with the daughters?
When you talk about the soldiers moving west, I can tell you a little bit about Oklahoma. Oklahoma had the land run in the 1880s. They had several land runs, actually, but the original ones, whole units of soldiers came, for example, from Ringgold, Pennsylvania. There was a group that settled in Carrier, Oklahoma. So they met north of the Oklahoma boundary in Caldwell, Kansas, and these whole units would do the land run together and settle specific towns. And that's true in Minnesota. It's true. They just went as a group. They went for land because the East Coast was kind of crowded. That's the kind of thing that we learn. I mean, I just went to the Minnesota Department Convention and the Iowa Department Convention, and it's the same thing there. Whole families went and units went, and they started these towns. They either became farmers or whatever. And the daughters of Union veterans of the Civil War, a lot of them are, for example, the Department of Iowa, most of them are related because of these relocations of families and intermarrying of families.
Again, thank you, Carol Comp, for joining us today on Community Voices. The Daughters of Union Veterans of the Civil War, or DUVCW, will be in Springfield for their 135th National Convention in July. Anything you'd like to leave us with?
Honor the veterans. Try to remember the sacrifices that our soldiers have made for us and that the families that survived them are still dealing with. We focus on the Civil War, but we try to remember all of our veterans and support them in any way we can, even today.
Carol, thank you very much for joining us today on Community Voices.
Thank you for having me.
What does the Community Voices process look like? Well, it starts with trying to identify a good neighbor to talk to or an event that may be interesting that for some folks it may be hard to get to. First, we get that on the radar, figure out when that is going to happen if there is a date involved with it. But more than anything, we depend on you to suggest a guest. By emailing communityvoices@mprillinois.org, we then go into a process of getting in contact with that person, figuring out if there's enough there, which there usually is, to talk about to help us get to know a little bit more about them or what they're working on or an event that's coming up. We have them come into the studios here at MPR Illinois and do an interview. That interview then gets edited and scheduled to air. It eventually comes on the air and then also gets posted at mprillinois.org, where we share it on social media and encourage our guests and you to do so too. If you've missed a past Community Voices, go to mprillinois.org right now. And thanks for being part of Community Voices. Community Voices has brought over 3,000 segments to you in our first 5 years. That's a lot of neighbors, organizations, and events to get to know. But there's nearly a 500,000 people in Central Illinois, so there's a long way to go. Help us. Suggest a guest. Email communityvoices@mprillinois.org. Get to know all of our neighbors with Community Voices weekdays at noon and 10 p.m.